Thank you, Chris. Really appreciated those thoughts from this week's Torah portion. We're going to do something a little bit different this morning, something that we've done before, and that is we are going to consider Proverbs chapter 11. So if you have a Bible, why don't you turn to Proverbs chapter 11? There are Bibles in front of you. And we will be using the NIV, the New International Version, which is the version in front of you. Rabbi Glenn, here's some water if you want it. Dave, you got some water? Okay. Now, Proverbs are great for a lot of reasons. The theme of Proverbs is wisdom. The theme of Proverbs is the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Knowing who God is and respecting Him and honoring Him and being loyal to Him. And then implementing His wise principles. He's a God of order and design and laws and principles. The more you know God, the better you know God, the more you know His principles and implement His principles, the more successful and better off you are going to be. And so Proverbs is full of wise sayings about spiritual truths and also very practical matters so you can have a successful, blessed life on earth. In Proverbs chapter 11, these Proverbs are shorter, and they either, it's like a two-part verse, one idea. The same idea is either repeated or the same idea is contrasted, the opposite. Okay? So, Proverbs chapter 11, we'll start with verse 1. The Lord detests dishonest scales, but accurate weights find favor with Him. Rabbi Glenn, why don't you start us off?
When I read that, it reminded me of a scene in Karate Kid 2 where you have this guy who's just a really shady character. He's selling produce in the marketplace, and he's got these weights. And people are coming, and they're putting the thing on, and he's got the weights. Well, it turns out that through a series of circumstances, the weights fall. They crack open, and you find out they're hollow. So in other words, he indicated a heavier weight than what it really was to make people pay more for their food. And we're told God hates that kind of dishonesty. Some of us remember growing up, at least in the Jewish community in Los Angeles, I remember my mother would take me to the butcher, and he's putting the meat on the scale. And certain butchers had a way of, in a hidden way, putting their pinky on the edge of that scale. And these things happen, but it's not, and people may think God doesn't notice these things, but He knows. Nothing is hidden from His sight, and He abhors that kind of dishonesty. So, you know, we tend to separate out our worship and our belief from our day-to-day life, and God says, you're not to do that. The conduct of your business should reflect what you believe about Me.
Absolutely. Dave, any thoughts?
Yeah, and I agree with your scale thing because I remember when I used to wrestle and we'd go to weigh-in, sometimes some of the wrestlers would try to curl their toes over the scale so it would look lighter, and the ref always had to watch that. So I've seen that happen. But, you know, that's right. Our Lord is really a just God, and He loves justice. And so when you're doing something dishonest, it's not just. And I think there's another implication for us as well. And it's like when you are getting dishonest gains, in other words, using those types of scales, you're getting money or you're getting something that doesn't belong to you. And that reminds us today that, you know, these get-rich-quick schemes or scams, something where you're going to get $1 million just by putting in a little bit, those things don't really happen. So we have to look at that justice in a couple of applications, I think, for us as we think about that.
I like what both of you said. You know, true religion is not just worshiping the Lord on, in our case, Shabbat or, you know, on Sunday. True religion, is reflected how you live your life. Money matters, business matters, you know, with ethics, with integrity. God is a God of honesty, righteousness, truth. He really detests, you know, cheating, stealing. Can't do it.
The word there actually is a word that you've taught us in the past, toeva. It's considered abominable to God that we would do that. But, you know, I like the fact that in this case, in verse 1, there's this antithetical parallelism where the reverse is true, that God shows favor to those who are honest in their dealings. If we think, oh, I'll never make it in this world being honest, don't say that, because God favors those who deal honestly.
People think that if they take shortcuts, moral, ethical shortcuts, if they cheat, if they steal, if they lie, they're going to make their lives better, right? That's why they do it. Easy pickings, easy gain. Really, the opposite is true. You're offending your Creator. The Lord detests that kind of way of doing things. He favors those. He makes our life better. He's on their side, those who are ethical and honest. Verse 2, when pride comes, then comes disgrace, but with humility comes wisdom. Rabbi Glenn, how about if we start with you?
Well, the first thing that strikes me is that a person in pride is not willing to receive instruction or correction. And the humble person is willing to receive instruction and correction. By receiving those things, we become wise. I mean, we don't come into this world wise. It's an acquired thing, but it requires that we're able to be taught and able to be corrected when we need to be.
Dave?
I think there's a reason why pride is really a representation of many of the very terrible sins, because it's so easy to sneak in. You know, it's like that leaven that we think about at Passover. It's like that sin. Before you even know that you're being prideful, you are. It just takes over you. You well up. You know that feeling when you're getting to be a bit prideful? Maybe you're kind of like, look at me type of thing. And that's very dangerous, because it can lead to greater areas of thinking how wonderful you are, how much better you are than somebody else. And that's not really the way we should look at it. I think, like Rabbi Glenn says, when you're humble, you can learn things. And there's so many things to learn from other people. I mean, many people have such great wisdom that it behooves us to try to listen to them, and maybe there's something that will come from them that will be beneficial to us. So I think those are always helpful.
Just a few thoughts, and I like what you gentlemen said. When pride comes, and pride is thinking too highly of yourself regarding other people, thinking too highly of yourself regarding God, you think that what you think is like more important than what God thinks, then, you know, you're that kind of pride, you start making mistakes. You don't treat other people right. You think that you deserve more. And so pride leads to disgrace. Verse 4, wealth is worthless in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. Rabbi Glenn.
Well, that theme of that righteousness delivers, it repeats throughout this chapter of Proverbs. Righteousness delivers. But this particular verse makes it very clear that there is a day of reckoning coming. There is a day of reckoning coming. And if we live our lives not in a fearful way, but with this true faith that God is a God who is going to judge the living and the dead, it's going to naturally affect how we conduct our lives. And so I think it just behooves us to remember that there is that day of wrath, that day of reckoning ahead.
Dave?
Well, it is true, absolutely. And you know, one of the other things is, if you think about the man that was so pleased with all his storehouses, and then the next day he died. And what happens with wealth is that it's something that we pursue. When we pursue wealth, or we're going after money, we're forsaking other things. For example, we're forsaking God. We're forsaking our families. We're not really getting our priorities straight, because this wealth has taken over our lives. So that's a very, very dangerous thing. And again, in the day of wrath, you won't have anything. It'll just be you face to face with the Lord. So I think that's important to think about.
You know, a lot of people want wealth. They think it's the way to success and happiness. And wealth does have some benefits, but it is limited. It can't do everything. It is worthless in the day of wrath, the day of judgment, or other situations here in life. You know, when life turns against you, wealth can really be of very limited value. On the other hand, righteousness has tremendous value, always, in every circumstance, in every situation. It even is so great, it delivers from death. So if you're going to pursue, if you have a choice, pursuing wealth, which has limited value, or pursuing righteousness, with that, which has tremendous value, what should we hunger and thirst for? Righteousness. Verse 5, the righteousness of the blameless makes their paths straight, but the wicked are brought down by their own wickedness. Rabbi Glenn.
You reap what you sow. If you live your life according to God's statutes, things are just going to tend to go better. If you live your life according to wicked devices and trying to maneuver people and things and use people and get ahead by wickedness, you're making your bed, you're going to lie in it. It's just things will come back to bite you.
Well, a couple things. I think Psalm 14 reminds us that there's no one. There's no one that is righteous. And I think we have to keep that in context, because in Romans 3, we're reminded that we're justified through the atonement of the Messiah. It's He who really justifies us. So the fact that if we spend too much time thinking we're righteous, that's not the way to go. I think what we need to look at is we are blessed to have accepted the Messiah, and we try to walk along His statutes. And in that way, we can He can make our path straight, and we can have that sense of being blameless because we're forgiven of our sin. But the wicked, they don't have time for God. They're about other things and doing stuff that God probably doesn't approve of. And so that is the road to destruction.
Let me define righteousness as being in a right relationship with God. That's number one. You must be in a right relationship with God. And part two is you are committed to doing the right things. That's a righteous man or a righteous woman. In a right relationship with God and committed to doing the right things. Will a righteous man occasionally not be righteous? Yes. But he's, in general, committed to doing what, you know, is right. And when you're in a right relationship with God and doing the right things, your life tends to go better. You're going to make less mistakes, less errors, less pitfalls. Your path will be straighter. The wicked, those who are not in a right relationship with God and are not committed to do the right things, they undermine their lives. They bring themselves down. Verse 7, hopes placed in mortals die with them. All the promise of their power comes to nothing. Rabbi Glenn.
This makes me think of Joseph in prison in Egypt, and having interpreted the dreams of the chief cupbearer and the chief baker. And he says to the chief cupbearer, please, when it goes well with you, please remember me. And the chief cupbearer completely forgot about him. For 2 years more, Joseph languished in prison. People will let us down. Even those with the best of intentions, people will let us down. And then the double whammy of it is when we have our hopes put in people and then they let us down, then we resent them. But the fact is that we just can't, it's not to say that we should be cynical. It's just that we should look to the Lord for our hope, to the Lord for our vindication, and not to other people.
Not only people let us down, but groups of people, governments, administrations can really let you down. Dave.
Yeah, I mean, it's just we're just human beings. I mean, we're fallen people, and we aren't perfect. And it's just a reminder of that there is only one who is perfect, and His precious Son, and that's where we really need to keep our focus. And so certainly we're going to count on people to do certain things, but our eternal hope is the most important hope.
Hopes placed in mortals die with them. All the promise of their power comes to nothing. So many people ignore God and look to, you know, people, powerful people, their hopes, human hopes, and it's got a limited shelf life. Human beings die. You know, governments die. Powerful, wealthy, influential human beings die. You've got to understand, you know, human mortality and not put all your eggs in that basket, right? You've got to look to the one who is eternal and put your hope in him. Otherwise, you are going to wind up having a very disappointed, fruitless life.
You know, Rabbi Lauren, in the book of Daniel, we were studying a couple of weeks ago about when Daniel was summoned to Belshazzar's presence, the hand that appeared, the writing on the wall, and Belshazzar's freaking out. And he says, if you can interpret this, I will give you wealth and a gold chain, and you'll be third in the kingdom. And Daniel's response is, keep your gifts for yourself, but I will tell you what it means. And he ends up being made third in the kingdom anyway, but he wasn't after that. And I tell you what, if he had put his hopes in all that Belshazzar could give him, it wouldn't have lasted long because Belshazzar died that night when Darius invaded. So we just can't put our hope in Psalm 118. You know, don't hope in man, don't hope in kings, hope in the Lord.
Amen. Verse 8, the righteous person is rescued from trouble, and it falls on the wicked instead. Rabbi Glenn.
You know, this verse reminds me that we cannot take Proverbs as these ironclad 100% happens every time guarantee. It should only be this way every single time, but it isn't going to be.
So Proverbs should be understood as general principles that are generally true, but not promises that are true in every situation.
Right. If we took verse 8 to as like this ironclad, this is going to happen every time, people would be accusing God of being unfair and unjust and of not keeping his promises. But we shouldn't take Proverbs as these ironclad promises. These are principles, general principles. But I tell you what, you could wish that verse 8 happened every single time. But in general, things come back to bite you. What you sow, you will reap. If you sow wickedness, it's going to come right back around to bite you. If you sow righteousness, that'll come back to bless you.
Dave, verse 8.
I think in a way, when the believer gets into trouble, hopefully the believer is looking to the Lord for guidance. And therefore, in those times of trouble, what happens is that through prayer and through things, even though the believer may have hardship, he's helped. The Lord helps him through that trouble, that difficulty. And he gives us the strength to hopefully get through those things. Again, the wicked, their priorities are different. So they are not looking to the Lord, and thus what happens to them is difficulties.
God is real. God is righteous. God is in control. And I believe that God favors and takes the side of the righteous, wants them to succeed, is working for them to succeed. He is not working for the wicked to succeed in their plans. So, in general, God wants to rescue the righteous from trouble. He's on their side. They're on his side. He wants to help them. He wants them to be successful. He is not committed to, helping the wicked. So the righteous person is rescued from trouble. It falls on the wicked instead. I think of Mordecai and Haman, right? We just celebrated Purim. A good example of, Mordecai being rescued and Haman forfeiting everything to Mordecai. Verses 10 and 11. I really like these because it shows that you cannot separate religion from politics. You cannot separate church and state. Okay? Verse 10, when the righteous prosper, the righteous are those who are in a right relationship with God and committed to doing the right things. When the righteous prosper, the city rejoices. The city's happy. The city's better off. When the wicked perish, they were in control of the city, their shouts of joy. Oh, those bums are finally gone. Through the blessing of the upright, those who are, right with God and straight and true, through the blessing of the upright, a city is exalted, lifted up. But by the mouth of the wicked, the city is destroyed. Rabbi Glenn.
My thoughts on this echo yours, Rabbi Lauren. You know, for better or for worse, cities and civilizations reap the harvest of the values and the virtues they extol, and the leaders they elect. And like you, I feel like we just don't dare try to divorce our faith from our voting practices. We dare not divorce any more than we would do so from our business practices. This whole idea of separate spheres, well, what I do on Sunday, or in our case Saturday, has no bearing on what I do on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. What I do on Sunday, or in our case Shabbat, has nothing to do with what I do when I go into the voting booth. We just dare not try to divorce our civil responsibilities from our faith, because if we elect godless opportunists, we as a society, an entire city, can suffer, and we've seen that time and again, that the city suffers for lack of godly leadership.
And we're seeing it right now, in my humble opinion. Rabbi David Goldstein.
Well, we've seen it in Detroit, unfortunately, with the leadership that has happened here in the past. And it's true. And I think that truly in a city, I mean, we want people that walk with God. We want people that are righteous. We want people that are just to lead us. I mean, I don't think anybody wants someone that's wicked to lead them, because how could you possibly trust them? How can you, what they told you, I mean, they might turn on you the next day. It's very, very dangerous. And so we've seen that in the past, and I think this could be extended to any type of organization. I mean, even the family. If you have good, godly parents, you know, hopefully that's going to help the family structure and the children and everybody.
As Christians and Messianic Jews, I think we must vote and, you know, support those who are righteous. You can survive a bad economy. We survived the Great Depression as a nation. In some ways, it toughened us and purified us. You cannot a society cannot survive evil and degradation and wickedness. So you must vote, you know, for God's men, God's women, those who are as righteous as they, you know. And by those standards, we're doing really, really poorly.
Rabbi Lauren, I'm just reminded of the upheaval in the evangelical community over what's happened in the last 4 days with World Vision. And I think most of you know what's going on with that. But, you know, when leadership accepts wickedness as a new norm, when we begin defining deviancy down and accepting unbiblical things as acceptable, we go down a very bad path.
Look at the Episcopalians who made some choices, you know, liberal Protestants, and now, you know, they made these choices years ago, but now, you know, they're really reaping the fruit, and, you know, homosexuality and pro-abortion, and, you know, they don't believe in the Bible anymore. It's just a sham of Christianity. Okay. Verse 12, whoever derides their neighbor has no sense, but the one who has understanding holds their tongue. The one who derides their neighbor has no sense, but the one who has understanding holds their tongue. Rabbi Glenn, how do you understand that?
Oh boy, this hits too close to home with me. Even though it might not be my tongue, my keyboard has the same effect. We need to think twice before we put things out there, whether verbally or on Facebook or wherever it is. We really need to think carefully. Because the contrast to this is a gentle answer turns away wrath. But, you know, your neighbor is somebody you have to live with. If I deride somebody who lives 1,000 miles away, it may not affect me, but yet I've got to think real carefully about anything that I say. And in general, this is it's always to me a little bit frightening what we're capable of saying in a moment of haste that just we regret. And, you know, you can tear down in a moment a relationship that may have taken years to develop can be just shredded in an instant with a harsh word.
So this is talking about not just a harsh word. It's talking about saying something derogatory,
insulting
yeah. towards a coworker. You know, sharing something with another coworker about that coworker, saying something to the coworker himself. Things have a way of like getting around, right? Dave?
I think that's absolutely true. And what happens when you're deriding someone is obviously you're putting them down or you're insulting them. This comes back to this pride thing. We think we're better. We think they're wrong. We say something about that. Why? Because we feel that we're better than them and we should tell them or say something about that to them or to somebody else. But in the New Testament, Paul reminds us that self-control is very important. Self-control, that pushing that pride down, not saying maybe what's on your mind at that very moment, but thinking about the situation. I mean, I've run into people that aren't really friendly, and you say maybe they're not friendly. Well, they're very introverted, and they have trouble expressing themselves, so consequently, they don't talk to you. They don't really say good morning. If you speak with them, they'll give you a short answer back. I mean, that's just a small example, but we really have to be careful when we think that it's in our mind, we know the situation, and we know what to say to this person to try to correct them through our pride.
You know, it's okay to confront someone, a coworker, a friend, a relative, if you know that they're doing something wrong or they're in a bad place, it's okay to go to them out of love and say, I'm concerned about you, I'm seeing this, have you considered doing something about it, can I help? I mean, it's okay to discern a problem and go to that person directly, you know, out of love and help, and confront them in a loving way. This is different, though. This is maybe seeing a problem, but, you know, just saying something nasty or just exposing them or, you know, insulting them to someone else or to them and without any desire to help them, you know, turn around.
And the frightening thing about this also is that somebody asked Yeshua, and who is my neighbor? If we think this only has to do with those who are close to us, the fact is that we're just better off not saying very much.
Learn how to hold your tongue,
yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Especially when you're putting someone down or insulting them, or just learn how to hold your tongue.
Yeah, can I say, as believers, how we conduct ourselves with our words really reflects. I mean, I spend a decent amount of time on Facebook, and I see the interaction, and I see what's being said by and about evangelicals. And one of the things that really yanked my chain some years back was this, and I saw it as bumper stickers, and I saw it going from people who were believers, and it said, "Pray for our president," Psalm 109:8. Now, they're taking something that's a good thing, pray for those in leadership, which Rabbi Paul tells us. But Psalm 109:8 was David pronouncing a curse on Ahithophel. And it later was fulfilled in Judas Iscariot. Pray for our president, Psalm 109:8. Are you really suggesting that I should pray that he dies? And I was ashamed, and I'll be honest with you, Rabbi Lauren, I took people to task for that. I don't know if I was gentle, but I took people to task for that. We're judged according to our words, and the world is watching us, and what kind of a testimony are we presenting?
Learn how to hold your tongue and control your Facebook page and other social media expressions. And bumper stickers. Verse 13, something similar. A gossip betrays a confidence, but a trustworthy person keeps a secret. Dave, how about you start with that?
Well, you know, that's one thing. If somebody tells you a confidence, they obviously think that they can trust you. And then you tell somebody else. And so it means that, in a sense, you're not trustworthy because you are betraying a confidence. And the second part of that, I think, is that many times some of these confidences are pains that people are experiencing or troubles that people are experiencing. And in a way, if a person gossips about that, it makes that person feel better because, hey, listen, you know what's happened to this person? I'm telling you, but, you know, aren't we glad that that's not happening to us? And that's just wrong to really be happy about somebody else's trouble. So being trustworthy is very important. If someone gives us a confidence, I think that's important. And then really being compassionate to people who are facing difficulties is important.
And I think we'd better watch out lest we couch gossip in prayer requests.
What do you mean, Rabbi Glenn?
Thou knowest. Obviously we want to pray for, we got to pray for so-and-so because, you know, her husband left her. You know, it's like, that's nobody's business. We better be careful lest we use prayer requests as a quote-unquote sanctified way to gossip about people. That's just deplorable. But, now I'll tell a funny little story. When I was in first grade, I had a crush on Lori Fader. She was the prettiest girl in the school.
Does Alexandra know about this?
Yeah.
Because I'll tell her if she doesn't.
You're welcome to. She knows the whole story. Lori Fader was the prettiest girl in the whole school, and I had a crush on her. And one day at recess, I said to her privately and very quietly, Lori, don't say anything to anybody, but I want to marry you. By lunchtime, the whole school knew. Glenn and Lori sitting in a tree.
All right? We got to keep it short.
Okay, but from that day on, I had no regard for her whatsoever.
All right.
No regard whatsoever.
You've got to learn how to keep a confidence. If someone trusts you with hidden, you know, private information, you have got to learn how to keep it confidential. It is hugely important. You don't want to betray that person. I know someone very well. As soon as you tell them anything, even if you tell them, please keep this confidential, please keep this private, they will find some way to let it out. So I have learned with this particular person, you cannot tell that person anything. And so I have to limit my communication to them. Okay? You don't want to be like that. God is a God of, you know, honesty and I don't know. You want to be more like him and be trustworthy and know when to speak and how to keep a secret. And even if there's a perverse pleasure, I've got hidden knowledge, let me share it with you about this person. It makes you feel bigger and, you know, you've got hidden knowledge. No, you resist. Verse 14, for lack of guidance, a nation falls. For lack of guidance, a nation can fall. But victory is won through many advisors or in the abundance of counselors. There is victory. This is one of my absolute favorite Proverbs, Rabbi Glenn.
This goes with verses 10 and 11, the idea that what makes for a good society? And a good society is a society that has wise and godly leaders who are also humble and receive good counsel themselves. The Bible recognizes no such thing as a successful secular society. We really need godly leadership. We need an abundance of wise counselors.
I think that's true, and obviously we've seen it in our own country with things that have happened here. So we need that guidance of the Lord. We really, really do, and really need to take it in and understand it. And I think the second part is many advisors could be divisive, but many advisors who are on the same page, in other words, godly people that are on the same page with everyone focused on the right thing, not tearing everybody down and bringing in all kinds of different goals and understanding and ways, but really everyone on the same page.
I want to treat it in a different way. What you both said is true, but I want to put it on a personal level, not just, you know, governmental officials. For lack of guidance, not only does a nation fall, but an individual can fall. We have some wisdom, but sometimes we are confronted with really difficult, complicated circumstances, or we have to make a really huge life decision. And I find so often that people will just try to figure it out on themselves, and they have limited wisdom, limited knowledge. They would be so much better off if they consulted, you know, maybe their parents, maybe a older, godly, wiser individual part of their community, their messianic rabbi. In the abundance of counselors, there is victory. People will come to me and, you know, ask me about, should I do this or that? And because I'm maybe older or had more life experience, I'm able to see something about their situation that they are not considering that can make the difference between success and failure. So something that you can't figure out, a complicated situation, a huge life decision, you go and get wise, godly counselors and advice. You will be much better off. Amen? Verse 15, a little economic financial proverb. Whoever puts up security for a stranger will surely suffer, but whoever refuses to shake hands in pledge is safe. And Rabbi Glenn and Dave, we got to keep this short. From here on in, short.
It's just not a good idea to co-sign, to be responsible for someone else's financial dealings. It's just not a good idea. Anything like that, certainly not for somebody who's an unknown quantity to you. It's just, it's foolishness at its face. But in the larger sense, we should be very careful in any kind of financial relationship. When Paul talks about don't be unequally yoked, he's not just talking about marriage. He's talking about any kind of relationship where there is mutual responsibility and mutual accountability. Something may happen to you on account of somebody else's misdoing, so we have to be very careful.
Dave?
Just very quickly, Jennifer told me this many years ago, and we've kind of lived our lives this way because we have helped other people in the past. And even though some people said, you know, we said it's a loan, she said this. She said, when you do something like this, be ready to part with that money. In other words, you give it and don't expect it back. So that's kind of the way we've looked at it in certain situations. And sometimes we're happily surprised and the loan is returned, and other times it's gone. But that's the way we treat it.
Got to be very careful co-signing loans, guaranteeing loans. You got to limit it to the like absolute closest friends and family, and then not always. You have to discern whether close friends or family are, you know, reliable. There's often a reason why people are coming to you to ask for money or for a loan, right? There's reasons. My folks did co-sign my first loan so we can get our first house in Southfield, and, you know, they trusted me enough, and that worked out well, but you just got to be really, really careful. Verse 20, the Lord detests those whose hearts are perverse, but he delights in those whose ways are blameless. Rabbi Glenn.
Well, out of the abundance of our heart, our mouth speaks, and out of the abundance of our heart, our feet move and our hands do things. I mean, whatever is in here is going to work itself out inevitably here and here, where we go. And the Lord is, you know, knows our hearts. And he sees the evil that people conceive of in their hearts. Likewise, he delights in those who want to please him, whose desire is to walk in his way. But eventually it's going to work itself out through our members.
Doesn't God love everyone? God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. If he loves everyone, how can he detest those whose hearts are perverse?
Well, when it says God so loved the world, it really means he loved mankind. That doesn't mean there are not individual human beings whose ways are perverse, and God does not love that.
He doesn't delight in them.
No. I mean, he desires that everyone turn from their sin. He desires that for everyone. You can say that God really loves everyone in the sense that he desires the best for every human being, but that doesn't mean that he doesn't detest things that people will do.
Verse 22, Dave, like a gold ring in a pig's snout. Like a gold ring in a pig's snout is a beautiful woman who shows no discretion.
Well, obviously, you know, you can look at the pig's snout and say, there's a gold ring, and that's pretty valuable, but what's it doing in a pig's nose? So this is not a good thing. And it shows that for women, one of the greatest qualities is really not the outward beauty. It's the inward beauty. A person whose heart is kind, a person who's gentle, a person that loves the Lord, a Proverbs 31 woman. And it's really, really important. And men who are yet to be married, when you look and you meet somebody, don't look at the outside. I mean, that's nice, but really look for those inside godly principles. One of them is discretion.
I have nothing to add to that. That was well said.
I agree. Most young men are immediately attracted to the physical, to good, you know, the outward good looks. Solomon would say, you know, that's nice, but you've got to, you've got to look at wisdom and righteousness and discretion. That's really, really important. Verses 24 through 26 will lump together. It's about generosity. One person gives freely, yet gains even more. Another withholds unduly, but ironically comes to poverty. A generous person, one who gives, will prosper. Whoever refreshes others will be refreshed. People curse the one who hoards grain when, you know, there's famine, but they pray God's blessing on the one who's willing to sell. A few thoughts, Rabbi Glenn, and again, we got to keep it short.
Sure. Well, money is just a commodity, but if we're tight-fisted with our finances, and I might add our time, because you can always replace money. Time, once it's gone, is gone. But if we're tight-fisted with our money, with our time, we prove ourselves spiritually impoverished. And, you know, God rewards those who are generous. He does. But if we're going to be tight-fisted and stingy with people, not willing to give, not willing to help, we're not making any friends here or in heaven, because we are being watched. And he really returns the blessing on those who are kind and generous.
In a way, it just shows, I mean, kind of a person who's too into themselves, a selfish person, cannot see outside of themselves. And that's really not the way we're supposed to be as believers. We're supposed to be compassionate. We're supposed to look around ourselves and see where perhaps we can help, maybe financially, maybe with our time. And that type of generosity is really, I think, important as a believer.
We tend to be greedy when we don't trust God, to provide that, you know, so we have to store up everything for ourselves and got to have a lot. But if we really trust the Lord, that frees us up to, you know, to be generous, to be gracious. So I think that's the secret to becoming a generous person. Last one, verse 30. The fruit of the righteous is an Eitz Chaim, a tree of life. The one who is wise saves lives, maybe other translations, saves souls, win souls. Rabbi Glenn.
I don't think it's coincidental that, as Paul wrote in Galatians 5 about the fruit of the Spirit, that we are going to exhibit the things that are at work inside of us. And if we'll look to the Lord and embrace his ways and look to Messiah Yeshua to be our righteousness and, you know, look to him and begin allowing the Spirit of God to work those things in us, others take notice of that. It doesn't escape people's notice, and it can be a benefit. I'm not saying that we depend on ourselves for other people's salvation, but the fact is we are on display. And our lives are either helping people, you know, to be reconciled to God, or we're a hindrance. I mean, even Yeshua said, he who does not gather with me scatters. So we really need to seek the Lord that his Spirit might transform us day by day, if not just for ourselves, but for the sake of others who are looking on.
Dave. Yeah, and I don't think this to me sums up this whole chapter, and I think it reminds me of, you know, Proverbs 3. Wisdom is a tree of life, those who cling fast to her. You know, that's very important. And it kind of sums it up, because wisdom is important. So how are we wise? Well, if we look through this chapter, we've had, you know, there's honesty, there's righteousness and blamelessness, there's trustworthiness, there's generosity, there's self-control. And so, in a way, being wise is about these principles and how we apply those principles which are from God into our own life.
The righteous are those who are right with God and are committed to doing the right things. The fruit of that kind of life, the result of that kind of life, is life. Life for themselves, but also they can have a profound life-giving, beneficial impact on others. And the one who is wise, he's right. You know, he's righteous. He's wise. He applies God's good principles. He saves lives. He leads people to God. He leads people to truth. He helps them discern God's wise principles. So we want to be like this. The result of our being right with God and doing the right things to be a blessing, a source of life and wisdom and life enhancement, not just to ourselves, but to the world around us.
How about an empirical test? How many of you, by raising your hand, came to the Lord in large part because of what you saw in somebody's life? You saw something significant in somebody's life, and it made a profound impact on you. Look at that. It really is true. It proves itself out in the
Rabbi Glenn, world. Dave Goldstein, thank you so much. Let's stand for the